Hello, everybody. Thank you very much, Luis, Etienne, and Fernando, for this wonderful opportunity, for inviting me to speak here at Collège de France. I really appreciate it and feel honored. Today, I'm going to talk about African history, inferences from modern and ancient DNA. So we humans as a species wonder about our history. We're very intrigued about our ancestors, where they lived, how they migrated, how they interacted with each other, and basically how they become us. And this was a question that very different disciplines have investigated in the past. For instance, linguistics, archaeology, paleoanthropology have investigated this question for decades, if not centuries. Genetics is another tool how we can investigate this question about our history. But genetics is a relatively recent addition to this toolkit in investigating human history. Nonetheless, genetics already have made quite a lot of contributions to infer how our species populated the planet. Because of genetics, or at least in part of genetics, we know that we had a relatively recent origin in Africa around 60 to 65,000 years ago. Fully modern humans left Africa and populated the rest of the world. Before that, humans evolved in Africa, and we know that African populations have the highest genetic diversities in the world. And then as you move away from Africa, genetic diversity is decreased, and in what we call a serial founder model. So this indicates that we had this relatively recent origin in Africa, and then fully modern humans migrated out of Africa, and as they migrated away, it was the serial founder model where they lost some of their diversity. But we also know, thanks to genetics, that we also admixed with some of the archaic humans or the other older human or more divergent human species that left Africa a few hundred thousand years before modern humans. And thanks to genetics, we definitely know that we had admixture with Neanderthals and Denisova. And there are many other studies that are now concentrating more on resolving the specifics of how many times we admix with these different archaic hominids. So the serial founder, again, we see this decrease of genetic diversity as we move away from Africa. This is not so clear. There's actually continents around all of these lines. But it basically shows the migrations of humans across the world. And more and more, we're finding out more fine-scale details of how humans first migrated out of Africa, populated the rest of the world, and also more finer-scale detail in terms of how agriculture has influenced human history with populations expanding and replacing other populations. And ancient DNA has especially been useful to disentangle the influences of agriculture and the Holocene history of Europe. But here for Africa, it up until relatively recently, we didn't know as much of what happened in Africa, how our species evolved in Africa genetically and how they became modern humans, and also the later migrations of humans in Africa. But we're learning more and more, and what we see for Africa is that there are two very distinct phases of African history. First, we have an early phase of relatedness of different small hunter-gatherer bands probably living across the landscape. And what we see is more gradients of relatedness among these hunter-gatherer groups. And how we study it genetically is that we study the few remaining hunter-gatherer groups that we still find in Africa. However, there's very few of these groups remaining. They are integrating into their neighboring farmer groups, which usually are the social dominant groups in the area. So studying these hunter-gatherer groups that are still remaining give us access to this deeper history of Africa. But ancient DNA can also give us direct access to the genetic variation of people living in the past in Africa. Then the next phase was the Holocene migrations, where we see several large migrations of groups that expanded quickly and migrated into other regions, sometimes completely replacing hunter-gatherer groups, sometimes interacting and mixing with hunter-gatherer groups. One of the most well-known expansion is the Bantu expansion that started around 5 to 3,000 years ago, where a large group, or where there was an expansion of people from West Africa, and there were large migrations across the African landscape, so that all sub-equatorial African countries today have their majority populations as Bantu-speaking groups. So these large expansions, let me just close this, maybe I'll just leave it. This one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. So these large-scale expansions of groups expanding, spreading farming practices really changed the genetic landscape of the African continent. So I'm going to look at now a few studies, what we learned more about African history, first based on modern DNA, and also then a few studies on ancient DNA. Almost 10 years ago now, I was part of the study where we looked at a larger distribution of hunter-gatherer groups across the African continent. There were other big studies that were also published more or less in the same time period that also included a lot of African groups, and I think we all came to quite similar conclusions regarding how different African populations are related to us and to each other, and how, what is the population structure of African populations. So in this study, we basically came up with this topology of how different African populations are related to each other. And what we saw is that if we represent populations in a tree, the first split in the tree is between the Khoisan hunter-gatherers from Southern Africa and basically the rest of all humans. Then we have a split between Central African rainforest hunter-gatherers and the rest of humanity. Then we have a split between East and West Africans, and all non-Africans are basically a subset of the variation that we see in Africa. And here I'm pointing to this date that we estimated here around 100,000 years ago. This was based on the old mutation rate. That was half of the mutation rate that we used today. So basically this date with our new mutation rate needs to be doubled to 200,000 years ago. But I will come back to this date when I'm going to discuss the ancient DNA studies, where we actually revise it and make it a bit deeper for the first population split in human populations. In this study, we also looked at genetic variation in two dimensions. So this is a PC plot where we represent genetic variation in individuals in two dimensions, and then we can compare it to the landscape, the geography. And what we saw is there's quite a good correlation between geography in Africa and genetic variation in two dimensions. And here we see all of the Khoisan, Southern African Khoisan groups, these red and purple dots, basically correspond to southern genetic variation. These green dots are all West African populations, for instance, like Yoruba from Nigeria and so on. And then these blue dots are East African populations. So you can see that principal component 1 and 2 then represent a north-south axis in Africa and also an east-west axis. It doesn't always correspond. For instance, you can see some of these green dots that's in the south now and in the east today still group with the green dot populations in the western part of Africa, and these are Bantu speakers. And they are these farmers that I mentioned before that expanded from West Africa, migrated to the rest of Africa. And even though today they live in southern and eastern Africa, when you look at them genetically, they have a West African background. So this was more or less how we then see genetic variation in African populations in two dimensions. We also looked at genetic diversity of populations in Africa. And what we clearly saw is, so here we use different summary statistics to summarize genetic diversity in the populations, And these are just different ways to summarize different aspects of genetic diversities in genomes of populations. And here we have three different summary statistics. Haplotype heterozygosity, haplotype richness, and linkage disequilibrium. And the colored lines here is African populations, and the gray lines is non-African populations. And what you immediately see, there's a big gap between non-African populations and African populations. And this is because of the out-of-Africa migration of populations where a lot of genetic diversity was lost. Still, you see there's a lot of sort of internal differences of genetic diversity in African populations as well. We know now, because of this out-of-Africa migration, a lot of genetic diversity was lost, but we also know that genetic diversity decreased with a distance from Africa, and this was shown previously by many different studies that show this pattern. For instance, this one where heterozygosity decreased with a distance from Africa, linkage disequilibrium increased with a distance from Africa. All of this is signifying this decrease of genetic diversity with distance from Africa. So what we wondered then with this study is, can summary statistics help us to pinpoint the origin of modern humans in Africa? So if we consider a similar sort of scenario, like the out of Africa, where humans exit out of Africa and move away from Africa, and we see decrease of genetic diversity, can we use this fact also? If there were one place in Africa where modern humans originated, we would see a decrease of genetic diversity from this position. And then we looked at summary statistics in our African population data set, where the highest genetic diversity is, according to these different summary statistics. And what we saw is that there was not really one place in Africa where the summary statistics could pinpoint that this is really the place that all of them support of having the highest genetic diversities. It basically pointed to Southern Africa, West Africa, and East Africa, so all of the places that we had populations were possible origins of modern humans if we think it was a single origin. And it worked the same as the out-of-Africa migration. So already then we realized that maybe there is a bit of a more complex history behind the populations in Africa. Definitely there's a deeper history. So maybe it didn't work exactly like the serial founder model for the out-of-Africa migration. So now I'm going to move to some ancient DNA studies. Ancient DNA in Africa is not so old. Africa, the environment in Africa is not so conducive to DNA preservation. Most of the ancient DNA studies were published for colder climates where DNA preservation is better. But then also we had the improve in lab methods and improvements in computational methods. And after a while, it became possible also to do ancient DNA studies in African populations, with the first study being published in 2015. But only 9 studies actually have been published so far that produced ancient DNA for African populations. And I'm going to just discuss this one now as an example. You can see Southern African ancient genomes. Estimate modern human divergence to around 300,000 years ago. So this is a deeper date as that 200,000 years that I mentioned previously. So what did we learn more from ancient DNA that helped us to sort of re-estimate this date to a deeper time period? This specific study, we included 7 individuals from Southern Africa. This is from the east coast of Southern Africa. So it's quite a humid and hot region of Southern Africa, the KwaZulu-Natal province, for people that know South Africa. And we were not so hopeful in the beginning that we would get good ancient DNA, but actually we were lucky and we got really nice results. And of the 8 samples that we tried, 7 of them actually gave us results. So this was really nice. The samples that we included were from 2 time periods. One was around 2,000 years ago, and the other time period was only around 500 years ago. And these samples are colored in green for the younger samples and in red for the older samples. And the ancient DNA have these black borders around them. And these other samples are modern-day comparative groups that we included in the study. When we generated our ancient DNA data, we actually got very good coverages. So we did shotgun sequencing. And some of the samples gave us almost high coverage genomes. This genome is covered 13 times, this one also. So we have quite high coverage ancient DNA genomes, which is quite unusual for ancient DNA to work so well so that we can get to these coverages. And these good samples, these very well preserved samples, gave us the opportunity to do a bit more specialized analysis. But then for these different samples, we were able to assign the sex, the Y chromosome haplogroup, mitochondrial DNA haplogroup. We also then visualized these ancient DNA samples on the background of modern day groups to see with which groups they are grouping. And we immediately see that the older and the younger samples are grouping with very different modern day groups. So the younger samples, the green ones, group with groups from West Africa, like the Yoruba and from Nigeria, so with West African variation groups. And the older samples, the red ones, group with modern-day Khoisan groups, most of them living in the western parts of Southern Africa today. There are no Khoisan groups living in this part of Southern Africa today. So this signified that there was, in this region, then a population replacement where Khoisan groups were replaced by incoming groups of West African ancestry, which then are the Bantu speakers that live today in Southern Africa. And these green dots are also Southern African Bantu speakers, these light green dots, so modern-day Southern African Bantu speakers. But here they look quite homogeneous. We also did a further study, and this study was actually concentrating on Southern African Bantu speakers to see in South Africa whether we see population structure between the different Bantu speaker groups. And we actually saw very nice population structure. So genetically, here again is genetic variation in two dimensions. And we could see that there is significant population structure in South African Bantu speakers, and that it correlates quite closely to both linguistics and geography. So these colored regions here are the language majority areas for the different Bantu-speaking groups. And you can see that it correlates quite closely, actually, with the genetics in two dimensions. But what we also use this study then for is to further classify those previously published ancient DNA individuals. And what we saw is that these Bantu speakers, these ancient Bantu speakers group with different modern-day Bantu speakers from Southern Africa. The ones that were a little bit younger group with the Nguni groups, like the Zulu and Xhosa groups, and the ones that are a little bit older, like around 500 to 600 years old, group with the Tsonga group. So this suggests some complexity in the expansion of Bantu speakers, that there were perhaps multiple waves of Bantu speakers expanding into Southern Africa. And it also shows the utility of ancient DNA then to disentangle these multiple waves of expansion that we all sort of suspect, that the Bantu expansion was not a simple process, but that it was quite complex with different spread over spread events. So in the future, ancient DNA will be a very useful tool to continue to disentangle the complexities of the Bantu expansion by plotting the ancient DNA on the background of modern day DNA groups. But I want to return then to so these were the green individuals, the Bantu speakers. So to these red individuals, which are the older individuals. And when we group, when we look at with which groups they are grouping today, they are grouping with modern-day Khoisan groups from the western parts of Southern Africa. And these modern-day Khoisan groups are these purple and reddish dots here. But you can see that the ancient DNA individuals actually define the extremes of the PC here, and all modern-day groups seem to be attracted to these other parts of the PC. And this could indicate that there is admixture in all of these modern-day groups compared to the ancient DNA individuals, but we need to test this, of course. And also, we tested this, whether there is admixture in modern-day Khoisan groups. So we did these formal tests of admixture based on F-statistics, and we built these models, admixture graphs, to test where this admixture comes from in modern-day Khoisan groups. And we used different ancient DNA individuals to anchor as anchor points in these admixture graphs. So you usually start with a simple sort of representation of how different groups mix, and then you make it more complex, and you build many, many of these graphs to see which one fit your data the best. And the one that fits our data was that the modern-day Khoisan group that were the least admixed of modern-day groups that previously many people thought this Yukuanxi, this group, didn't have any admixture. And this was also the group that were used to estimate split times, or the first split time in the modern human tree. So using this group, we found out that even the Yukuanxi received admixture from groups that migrated, other groups that migrated into Southern Africa. And this Yukuanxi, the least admixed modern-day Khoisan group, have 12% admixture. So using the ancient DNA as anchor points, we were able to see that even this least admixed Khoisan group did receive admixture. And the Nama Khoi Khoi group were the most admixed. They have around 30% of admixture. And then when we test where this admixture came from, it was a group with mixed East African and non-African genetic ancestry. And it's represented by this arrow coming here from East Africa migrating into Southern Africa around 2,000 years ago. And we know from archaeology this is also associated with the introduction of herding practices into Southern Africa and the Khoi Khoi groups that live in Southern Africa today. So this was a mixed East African, non-African group then that came from the eastern parts of Africa, migrated and introduced herding practices into Southern Africa. They mixed with hunter-gatherer groups of Southern Africa, the original San hunter-gatherers of Southern Africa. And previously, it was thought that they only mixed into the Khoi Khoi groups, like the Nama. But now, with using the ancient DNA, we could see they mixed into many of, or all of the San groups that we tested. This group also mixed into them. And the group that previously thought were unadmixed, the Yukuanxi, also received admixture from this mixed East African group and around 12% admixture. So the fact that this group then is a mixed group also influenced the split times when we re-estimated the split times, this first split time of Khoisan groups from other groups. So using previous this modern-day Khoisan group, the Yukuanxi, we have this sort of distribution of this first split time between San and other groups. But using the ancient DNA individuals that were non-admixed compared to the modern-day DNA samples, we see that we get a deeper split time compared to when using the modern-day group. So then, in this study, we redraw, we made this topology of how different African groups are related to each other, and we re-estimated the split time to around 300,000 years ago with the San, the South African San groups, and we see that the first split between different human groups, modern-day human groups, are between Khoisan hunter-gatherers in Southern Africa, both the Southern San and the Northern San, and all other African groups. Then we have a split of the rainforest hunter-gatherers, a split between East and West Africans, and then we have the out-of-Africa bottleneck of people expanding out of Africa and being a subset of African genetic variation. But what we try to illustrate with this topology is the deep population structure that we already see in Africa and the amount of genetic diversity that we already see in Africa before the first out-of-Africa migration. And then coming back to this time period, which is a really interesting time period when we see the first population divergences between modern human populations, around 300,000 years ago. If we look at the fossil record, how the fossils on the African continent look during this time period, so this is a representation of the African fossil record from around 700,000 years ago to present, and this is the time period of interest around 300,000 years ago. When we look for North, East, and Southern Africa, we see that there are people living on the landscape in these different places in Africa. So we have people living across Africa, and how they look like is that they were basically humans that were transitioning from archaic forms into modern forms. So they still had some archaic features, but they were transitioning into completely modern humans. And this we see happening in a gradient. So the very old fossils still have very archaic features. And then there's a gradient of transitioning into modern features, but not just in one place in Africa, but in several places in North, East, and Southern Africa in this case. And these are just the places where we have preservation of humans. In West Africa, for instance, bones doesn't preserve very well because the soil is very acidic. But most probably, there were humans living there as well. And the archaeology record actually indicates that there is material culture of human groups living in West Africa. And even though this record might look, if there's some gaps here, these are just fossils that happen to preserve. When we look at the archaeological record of stone tools on the landscape, we see continuous occupation of these very different places on the African continent. And then in this time period, archaic humans are transitioning into modern human forms in different places in Africa. So more and more in the paleoanthropology community that studies the future of the morphology of humans, people are gravitating more towards this pan-African origin of modern humans, that modern humans didn't just evolve in one place, but there was a pan-African origin of Homo sapiens. So if we look at the genetic topology like this of population divergences, what does it then mean? If they sort of converge into a point here, does it mean that this was one population, one place where modern humans originated in Africa? So to understand that, we need to consider what we represent when we have a population topology like this based on autosomes. For instance, when we study the mitochondria and the Y chromosome, we can build a phylogenetic tree like this, because mitochondria and Y chromosome don't recombine. They are inherited intact from one generation to the next. So the only variation that are incorporated are mutations that accumulate in them. So you can build a tree like this, mitochondrial DNA and Y chromosome tree, that goes to a single ancestor that lived in the past. So in the case of the mitochondria, we know there was one ancestor that lived around 200,000 years ago in southern or eastern Africa that was our mitochondrial Eve that gave rise to all of the mitochondria that are on Earth today. So we had one single ancestor giving rise to all of our mitochondria. The same with the Y chromosome. There's one ancestor that lived around 400,000 years ago, at this time in Western Africa, and that ancestor gave rise to all of the Y chromosomes on Earth today. So we have a Y chromosome Adam living in West Africa and the mitochondrial Eve living in East Africa. But they were not living alone. They were living with many other people together with them. And these other people were our other ancestors of our other chromosomes. And the mitochondrial Y chromosome is relatively small. We have a lot more variation on our other chromosomes, and we have a lot more ancestors from the pieces of genetic variation on our other chromosomes. But it's very difficult to work with that. It's not as easy to build trees because the other chromosomes recombine with each other and genetic information are exchanged the whole time. So there's various ways that you can try to overcome this. This method, for instance, chops up the genome in very small pieces and then builds many, many different phylogenetic trees of all of these small pieces of the genome. And then it draws a consensus tree of all of these small phylogenies. For instance, like the mitochondrial Y chromosome, many thousands of phylogenies are built across the genome. And then you have a consensus tree of all of these. And this is the population trees then that we look at when we have a population tree like this. Underlying this is thousands and thousands of different topologies, and it's not necessary that all of those ancestors of those separate typologies have lived in a single place. They could have lived in different places in Africa, for instance, like the mitochondrial Eve and Y chromosome Adam, and they could coalesce in different times. So that is probably what's underlying a topology like this. Very different ancestors from different places in Africa coalescing at different time periods and in different places on the landscape. So this is one representation that could be a possibility. And when you build a tree, many different sort of models that underlie a topology like this can actually explain genetic variation in Africa. So it's likely not one origin, as it appears from this tree, but it could also be a model like this that is called the isolation by distance model. Here we have several populations living over the landscape, so several beams of populations living across the landscape, and then they have stepwise gene flow with each other. And in the end, the populations least related to each other will be the ones furthest removed from each other on the landscape. And this will also give a topology like this if you estimate a tree. And there could be many models in between this also. This is kind of the two extremes of the models, a tree-like model and the isolation by distance model. So more and more people are talking about this, about human origins in Africa, and asking the question whether our species evolved in one population or in subdivided populations. This article is addressing this. It's written by both geneticists and paleoanthropologists, so it's a common question that we have. This is also a nice article with Brenna Henn, identifying some of these models that needs to be tested. And I know she's working together with Simon Gravel further on this, testing some of these models. So this is very exciting work, and I think there will be a talk also later in the conference about this, different models testing the different origins of different models of origins of humans in Africa. This is also a very nice review article, again written by paleoanthropologist and geneticist, a combination of forces. And they outline the different origin models. Here is this isolation by distance, long-standing Pan-African connectivity model. Here is the single origin model, and here is kind of an in-between model, where you have the isolation by distance model with one of the populations expanding into the other population. What they did say in the article is that the current evidence can say that the single origin model is probably can probably be rejected. And that it's more likely one of these type of models that explain human origins in Africa. Interesting here, they note here possible archaic admixture, so a group that diverged earlier from the population tree that sort of mixed back in the population tree, like Neanderthals, for instance, mixed into non-Africans. Similar events could have happened in Africa, where an early diverging group mixed back into one of the modern-day African populations. So there's a possibility of that, and this is also a question that many groups are investigating. For instance, Sriram, that's also here at the conference, his group investigating this archaic introgression, this archaic admixture in African populations recently. Some of the ancient DNA studies that were published from Africa also, when they built models, also needed to incorporate this archaic admixture, possible archaic admixture, to be able to make their models work. So this is definitely something that needs to be further investigated also, this possibility of archaic admixture, a deeper diverging group. So here we have the modern human origins of modern-day populations, so possibly a deeper diverging group could have mixed back into one of the populations living today. So this is also a very interesting question that needs to be investigated further. Just a summary of what we know so far. So it's more and more clear that Africa has a complex demography, that it's most probably not a simple tree-like structure or a single origin. Rather, it is like this river delta network with lineages and populations splitting from each other and then merging again into the same populations. So what we need is the rigorous testing of different models that can represent how humans originated in Africa. And we need to use the appropriate summary statistics to distinguish between them. And then we also need to incorporate geographic and climatic modeling. And this is really sort of a wish for the future because it is quite complex to do all of this. And then we need more African ancient DNA studies. Furthermore, the farming expansions in Africa were quite complex, and we can see really that ancient DNA in the future will have a utility to resolve this complexity of ancient DNA or of migrations of African farming groups. And then at the end, I just want to acknowledge my group at Uppsala University and my South African collaborators, both with regards to the modern day and ancient DNA studies, and also the Sydney Brenner Institute in South Africa with regards to the study on modern day Bantu speaking populations, and also the funders that fund my research. Thank you very much.